Ficatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ficatra AI.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in one of the most dynamic and, I think, contested histories in modern Europe, Ireland. We're looking at Senia Pascheta's really insightful work, Modern Ireland, Complexity, Identity, and Transformation.
Yeah, and our mission here is, well, it's pretty crucial because Pascheta really moves beyond those, you know, easy, sometimes mythologized narratives, the simple story of victimhood and then this sort of triumphant independence.
Right.
She wants us to actually wrestle with the complexities. We're talking about that constant tension, nationalism versus unionism, the big clash of tradition against rapid modernity.
And that shift with religion, too.
Oh, absolutely. The incredible speed of Ireland's shift from, you know, a deeply religious society to a much more secular one.
And understanding this history, it isn't just like an academic exercise, is it? It really helps explain the headlines we see now.
You can't really grasp the political sensitivity of the border after Brexit or the sheer speed of social change in the Republic. Things like the referendums on same-sex marriage and abortion, without getting these deep historical roots, the roots that created the Republic in Northern Ireland.
Exactly. Without understanding the ghosts of the Civil War or the long shadow, you know, the famine cast over the national psyche, the current political landscape is just, well, it's pretty hard to decipher.
So who's our guide through all this? The author is Senia Pascheta. She's professor of modern history at Oxford, and she specializes in modern Irish and British history. She's done extensive work on nationalism, gender, and the cultural side of Irish history.
And what's really fascinating about her approach, I think, is her method. She doesn't just stick to the high-level political stuff, you know, the laws, the treaties, the big political figures.
Mm-hmm.
She deliberately brings in social and cultural analysis, and that lets her move beyond just the great men focus and explore how cultural movements and the lives of ordinary people actually shape the nation.
And being at Oxford maybe gives her that necessary analytical distance. This doesn't feel like a history written to sort of settle old scores. It feels like a balanced overview, which is great, especially for an international audience trying to make sense of a history that can be incredibly emotionally charged inside Ireland.
Right. And if we sort of connect this to the bigger picture, Pascheta's main argument really is that modern Irish history is just defined by contradiction.
Mm.
Ireland's transformation wasn't simply forced on it from outside, nor was it just a purely internal thing. It came about through these really dynamic processes of adaptation, resistance, and creative synthesis.
That's a great phrase.
It is. It's a story where the Irish people were active agents, constantly negotiating between their own traditions and these external pressures.
So that frames the whole book as this really compelling journey, and it covers a massive time frame, too. It starts way back with the 1798 rebellion and the Act of Union in 1801 and brings us right up, essentially, to today. It's a roadmap through huge political upheaval, the famine, the rise of nationalism, the Civil War, eventually joining the EU.
But the ambition, intellectually, is to show Ireland as this small nation that was actively participating in global modernization.
Mm.
It proves, I think, that nationhood is constantly being defined and redefined, you know, through internal conflicts just as much as through external struggles.
Okay, so let's zoom in a bit. Let's talk about those foundational shifts in the 19th century. The Act of Union in 1801, the one that merged the Irish and British parliaments, that actually made the identity struggle more intense, didn't it?
It really did.
Yeah.
But it also forced early political figures to grapple with, well, mass democracy.
Right. And the key figure there.
Oh, undoubtedly Daniel O'Connell, the liberator. Pascheta really highlights him because he basically pioneered mass political mobilization to get Catholic emancipation in 1829. That allowed Catholics to actually sit in parliament.
And his methods were key.
His tactics, yeah.
Yeah.
Using popular rhetoric, but combining it with really strong legal action that set the template for pretty much every constitutional nationalist movement that came after him.
Okay, so you have O'Connell. Then comes this catastrophic turning point,
mm-hmm.
The Great Famine, 1845 to 52. Most people think of it purely in humanitarian terms, the starvation, the emigration.
It was horrific, obviously.
Yeah.
But Pascheta shifts the focus. She shows it was a transformative catalyst. It actually accelerated a painful kind of modernization and social restructuring, like farms getting bigger, consolidating because of the massive demographic change from death and immigration.
Right. Not just a tragedy, but a driver of change.
Exactly. And crucially, the perception that the British administration failed miserably in its relief efforts during the famine that fueled this deep, lasting resentment. It was the moment, you could argue, that severed the Irish psychological link to the Union. It turned economic grievance into this non-negotiable demand for self-determination.
Wow.
And from then on, the land question, the fight against absentee landlords, became the absolute central political and economic issue. That led eventually to the land wars and the reforms under Charles Stuart Parnell.
So the political route under Parnell started to falter, home rule bills kept failing, and you've got this deep economic resentment cemented by the famine. Where did people turn when those established paths seemed blocked?
Well, they turned to culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to have a political revolution if you don't have a clear sense of identity first, right?
Yeah.
So before the actual fighting, there was this quieter but really powerful cultural revolution happening, the Gaelic Revival in the late 19th century.
Ah, yes. The Gaelic League and the Gaelic Athletic Association, the GAA. We might think of them as just promoting language or sports, but they were more than that.
Oh, much more. They weren't just hobby groups. Pochetta presents them as effectively revolutionary factories. They were actively trying to create a distinct, modern, Irish cultural identity, language, sports, literature, specifically separate from Britain.
So building the cultural nation before the political one.
Precisely. This wasn't just about preserving old traditions. It provided the ideological fuel. And crucially, it built the organizational networks, the foot soldiers, really, for the political revolution that came next. When the constitutional options failed, that cultural foundation provided the energy for radicalism.
And that radicalism then explodes onto the scene, partly because of those repeated failures of the Home Rule bills, the ones that would have given Ireland some self-governance within the UK.
Yeah, the door just swung open for physical force nationalists.
Yeah, and the key event we all know, the 1916 Easter Rising. Which initially was a military disaster, wasn't it? And not even popular in Dublin at the time.
Not at all. But then the British execution of the leaders, they completely transformed it into this huge symbolic political success. It swung public opinion decisively behind Sinn Féin. And that leads to the War of Independence and then the Anglo-Irish Treaty in 1921.
But that treaty, it partitioned the island. Hugely divisive.
Instantly divisive. Leading straight into the tragic civil war between those who accepted the compromise, the Free State, and those who rejected it.
Which brings us neatly to the creation of those two states. Let's start with the South, the Irish Free State, the one that emerged in the Civil War. It was fundamentally conservative.
Deeply conservative.
Yeah.
Agrarian and intensely Catholic. And here's that paradox of post-colonial nation building that Pacheta really stresses.
Explain that a bit more.
Well, the newly sovereign state basically outsourced huge chunks of social policy, education, healthcare, morality, censorship to the Catholic Church. This created a very inward-looking society defined by strict rules, bans on divorce, contraception. That conservative vision was really personified by Emon de Valera and his 1937 constitution.
That idea of outsourcing state functions to the church, it seems like a huge compromise for a nation that just fought for independence. Was there any real pushback against that model at the time?
There was some intellectual challenge, yes. But the deep trauma of the Civil War meant that national unity became the absolute priority. Often that came at the expense of individual liberties. The state essentially traded one external authority, Britain, for a very powerful internal one,
right.
The Catholic hierarchy. It took decades, really, for that balance to start shifting.
Meanwhile, up north, Northern Ireland was set up for the opposite reason, right? Explicitly to guarantee a permanent Protestant Unionist majority.
Precisely. Leaders like James Craig built the state determined to resist being absorbed into a Catholic majority Ireland. And this led directly to systemic discrimination against the Catholic minority.
How did they maintain that?
Well, key tools were things like gerrymandering, drawing electoral boundary deliberately to dilute the Catholic vote, alongside discrimination in housing and jobs. It created a fundamentally sectarian state structure.
Yeah.
And that deep injustice, of course, laid the groundwork for the instability that finally exploded into the Troubles in the late 1960s.
Such deep divisions. How does Pacheta then cover the resolution or the attempt at resolution in the North?
The peace process, which culminated in the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, is presented as a really crucial case study. Almost a model for global conflict resolution in some ways. It established mandatory power sharing between nationalists and unionists, and critically, it recognized dual identities people could be Irish, British, or both within Northern Ireland.
So transforming the conflict.
Trying to transform those historical zero-sum divisions into manageable democratic differences. It required huge political effort, institutional innovation.
And while this is happening in the North, the South is going through its own massive change, what Pacheta calls the Second Revolution, the Celtic Tiger economic boom in the 90s and Boughtons.
Yeah, that fundamentally changed the country from the inside out.
Yep.
The economic prosperity, which itself had roots in earlier planning by figures like Sean Lamass in the 60s, plus massive EU integration, later combined with the decline of the Catholic Church's moral authority after various scandals. It all fueled incredibly rapid social liberalization. You see it in the successful referendums, legalizing divorce in 95, same-sex marriage in 2015, repealing the abortion ban in 2018. These effectively dismantled that conservative Catholic state envisioned by the revolutionary generation. It led to the modern, much more secular cosmopolitan society you see today.
Wow. It's such a huge sweep of change. So if we try to distill all this down, what are the core themes Pacheta wants us to take away from this complex history?
Okay, first and foremost, I'd say it's the contested nature of Irish identity. The question of what Irishness even means has always been this constant, often bitter argument. Nationalists versus Unionists, North versus South. Pacheta shows how identity was forged against Britain, sure, but it was always deeply fractured by internal divisions. And you still see echoes of that today, like in the Brexit debates.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, what's number two? Second, that paradox of post-colonial nation building. How the Irish Free State won political freedom, but then initially used its sovereignty to impose quite strict religious and social controls on its own people. It's a really powerful reminder, isn't it, that just gaining political independence doesn't automatically guarantee individual liberty.
Absolutely. And the third one, I think, is about modernization as creative synthesis. Successful modernization in Ireland wasn't about just throwing out history. It required combining that indigenous cultural energy like the Gaelic Revival with selectively adopting external innovations like EU integration or embracing foreign investment. It wasn't choosing tradition or modernity. It was finding ways to blend them.
That synthesis idea is really interesting. Let's maybe touch on some specific lines or powerful ideas from the book that capture these themes.
Okay. Well, Pacheta really captures the deep psychological impact of the famine with this core idea. The Great Famine was a watershed moment that severed the Irish psychological connection to the Union, transforming economic grievance into a non-negotiable demand for national self-determination. It just completely changed the political game.
That's powerful. And the point about the Free State really lands, too. The Irish Free State, having won its political freedom, used its newfound sovereignty to construct a state in the image of the Catholic Church. It really highlights how political revolutions can sometimes have very conservative social results.
Yeah, it's a stark point. And then on a more optimistic note, maybe regarding the conflict resolution, she points out something like, the peace process demonstrated that even the most intractable conflicts could potentially be resolved through sustained political effort and institutional innovation. But, crucially, only if all sides remain committed to democratic methods and mutual recognition.
Right, the hard work involved. So if we take this historical understanding, this lens Pacheta gives us, what are the real-life applications? How can this help us understand things beyond Ireland?
Well, for one, the Northern Ireland peace process, despite its ongoing difficulties, really does offer a potent real-world model for trying to manage seemingly impossible ethno-nationalist conflicts elsewhere. It underlines the need for inclusive institutions, ways to accommodate difference, recognizing dual identities rather than forcing everyone into one box.
And the social change aspect in the South, that's incredibly telling too. Ireland's lightning-fast transformation from one of Europe's most conservative societies to a really progressive, liberal one, it shows the huge power of things like economic prosperity, education, globalization, and challenging traditional norms. And it shows that even apparently rock-solid religious authority can erode surprisingly quickly when faced with modernity.
And there's also a lesson in economics, perhaps. Ireland's experience with the Celtic Tiger gives some practical insights for small nations everywhere. It shows how you can potentially leverage strategic international integration, like joining the EU, and invest heavily in an educated workforce to build prosperity while still managing to maintain cultural distinctiveness. It's a tricky balance, but Ireland navigated it, for a time at least.
For me, reflecting on this, what really stands out from Pacheta's work is her ability to kind of demythologize the history, to show it wasn't some inevitable story of destiny or fate playing out.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a series of really contested choices, brutal struggles, and profound arguments within Ireland about the very soul of the nation. That makes it a much more human and, frankly, a more dramatic story.
I agree. And I think the lasting insight for you, the listener, is just how profoundly and persistently the past influences the present. To understand today's challenges, whether it's the fragility of social cohesion after Brexit or why the economic gap between North and South still matters, you have to understand the historical forces. The famine's long shadow, the ghosts of the Civil War, the legacy of partition, these things created the ground we stand on. History isn't just backstory, it's actively present.
A really vital perspective. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.